number 3 on this Friday edition of the Hagman Report. We have Doug Papa joining us in just a few moments, but first I want to bring you a quick word from Greenovative, as Greenovative Christmas sale ends at midnight, and this sale will be gone for a long time, so don't miss out. Now is the time to get your Greenovative saltwater powered battery chargers with a ton of accessories. Go to greenovative.com and take 30% off the entire store using coupon code Hagman. And it's a great deal. Make sure that you stock up before they run out or their sale is over, which is tonight at midnight.
Definitely do Greenovative. I'm going to tell you, you know, lights out, you need power, there it is. It's the answer. And Greenovative is a great company. Greenovative, and would you say the coupon code?
Until midnight tonight.
All right.
Code Hagman.
And you know, all of the people we are partnered with, Ready Made Resources, Bob Griswold, TC Joseph, This Generation Series. My goodness.
He sent us some Christmas cookies.
Yes, he did. What a great man. And what a great series of novels he's got. TC Joseph, This Generation Series. Ready Made Resources, Bob Griswold, Satellite Phone Store. Look, all of the links are on the right-hand side of our website, Hagman Report. Just go there. And when you're doing your last-minute shopping, hey, you've got all of it. And when you do that, it helps us. It helps keep us on the air. It helps the people who are selling the products. It helps, and it helps the recipients of the gifts you buy. Or if you're buying them for yourself, it helps you. Now, Doug Papa. How many people saw Doug Papa on Tucker Carlson? And if you didn't, you missed. You missed it. Doug Papa appeared on Tucker Carlson. And it seems like the issue of Vegas, Joe, has kind of fallen off people's radar.
Yes, and no. There's a few articles. I saw CNN actually put an article out there today, or yesterday, as to why the lawsuits, 450 family or victims lawsuits, and why we still have no answers from the police.
But hey, wait a second. We're promised to get answers next month. Now, I talked to Pat Campbell, the KFAQ, and, you know, this is so frustrating to me. The Las Vegas, this black hole that is Las Vegas. You've got this mass, I've got so many questions. And you look at the internet, you look at all of these, possibilities. First of all, I will say this. Don't even tell me that no one was shot, no one was killed, or they were all crisis actors there. Please don't tell me that. Because that's not true. And how I know this, I've talked to people who were there. Now, if you want to talk about potentially multiple shooters, you want to talk about other scenarios, that's different. But the people who said that no one died or, you know, whatever, Las Vegas to me is an affront to the victims. And you can even talk about the many other lines. You know, I look at this, I look at the alleged perpetrator, and I've got so many questions. 23 weapons in the room. Selling of the, and Doug Papa talks about this, selling of the images. If you go to Baltimore Examiner, I hope I got that right just now. But if you go to where he's written 35 plus articles on this, you'll be educated. And I'll tell you something, Doug Papa, top cop, detective of the year back in 86, 87, he knows, and of course his time in Las Vegas with the security, casino security. This is our go-to guy in law enforcement. So with that, do we have him?
Mm-hmm. Yes, we do.
Here I am rambling. I thought I was waiting for a thumbs up.
You
gotta
look for the cue from Eric.
I didn't see it. I'm looking right at him. I didn't see it. I'm blocked by a monitor. Okay. Hey, Doug Papa, welcome.
How you doing, Joe? Doug? Glad to see you back, Joe. You were sick the last time, I believe, I was on.
Yeah, I had strep throat. It was pretty nasty. But
pretty bad.
Thanks for coming back.
Yeah. Well, where are we at with? By the way, good job on Tucker Carlson. Wow, pretty cool.
Yeah, Yeah, thanks a lot. It was, you know, there wasn't enough time. It was 7 minutes, but I got out two of the big things I wanted to talk about. Where was the SWAT team? Why Levi Hancock had to go in that room by himself?
Yep.
And then about the force investigation team. So I got that out, which was pretty good. But yeah, he's got, you know, he's got a big show. He talks about other stuff. And I'm glad you said what you said. I was listening to before I came on, because I get so many emails. It's just unbelievable when people write me emails with these conspiracy theories that are so far-fetched. You know, I don't care if somebody says, you know, I think there was another shooter across the street or something like that, because, you know, I don't know. I don't know. We don't know nothing. Basically, we know nothing. We know there's a dead body in the room, supposedly Stephen Paddock, from what they told us. Those people were shot, 58 dead, over 500 injured and wounded. But pretty much that's all we know. But some of these emails I get are just extremely sad that people actually leave, just like you said. I mean, I got tons of them, and I just delete them as soon as I get them, that the people there weren't killed. They were wax dummies and all this type of nonsense. You know, and people got to understand something. You know, conspiracy theorists sometimes, they do bring a value if they leave it in the realm of common sense, because they're asking questions. You know, was there another shooter? Could have been more shooters. But when you go into this nonsense, just like what you said at the beginning of the show, do they understand that that hurts us people trying to find answers to what actually happened? And it's a disgrace. I mean, you know, 58 people died, and a bunch of others were wounded and injured, and a lot of them are going to live with those scars for the rest of their life, both emotional and physical. So, you know, it's pretty sad when you have to have people, you know, say this crazy stuff like that.
The credibility factor too. I just want to mention, because, you know, when you talk with people who are family members of the victims, or in one case a victim of the shooting herself, you know, it's an affront to those people, and plus it does make us look like a bunch of you know, lunatics.
Right.
We know. So, okay. Now, when I talked to Pat Campbell at KFAQ out of Tulsa, Oklahoma, when I said that Doug Papa from the Baltimore Post Examiner said that there was no SWAT team response, I could hear his, you know, mouth drop open, and he said, "What?" You know, I thought there was, and so I kind of parroted, or I referenced the articles that you have written and what you said last time. No SWAT response. You got, what, two SWAT teams in Vegas, two 20-man SWAT teams, and just because you had a member of the SWAT team, part of the response, police response, doesn't mean the SWAT team responded, right? I mean, that's what we have.
That's correct. That's correct. What we know at this point, because I don't even call Metro up anymore because they don't say anything, you know. So basically what we know is this, okay? An hour and 5 minutes after the last shots were fired, Levi Hancock, who was the SWAT officer, the explosive breacher, blew the door and went in with two canine officers, Sergeant Bitsko and canine officer detective who was in uniform that night, Matthew Donaldson. That's who went into the room. We don't know where the SWAT team was. Now, if you listen to the radio traffic, about an hour later, after the last shot was fired, after they reached the room, you start hearing the commander and stuff on the radio saying there's a SWAT team coming into the hotel into one of the stairwells. But this is well over an hour after everything had happened. They weren't there. The thing is with me is we know one thing. Levi Hancock, lone SWAT officer, went into that room with three guys. They were all heroes as far as I'm concerned. I even put that in my – I wrote two stories the other day. The last two stories I wrote were – basically hitting on the SWAT team and the fact that, you know, the photographs were leaked. That was a story I wrote before. And two of the photographs, I know for a fact, I was told, were leaked by someone in the command staff of Sheriff Lombardo, which I think, and I got to say this as a former police officer, I think is a total disgrace. Now, I got a lot of idiots sending me emails and making comments on my story saying, you know, that you're ignorant because stuff gets leaked all the time. I don't care if stuff gets leaked all the time, okay? Compromising any criminal investigation, and that's what you do when you leak crime scene photographs to the press, okay? And you put them on, and they're on the internet, they're all over the world, 1 or 2 days after the incident happened, okay? I don't care if it happens every day. It's criminal and it's wrong. You jeopardize the criminal investigation by doing that. And somebody said, what's the big deal? How are they jeopardizing the investigation? Well, when you do an investigation, you don't know basically nothing. You're starting out from scratch. You may have a body, you may have dead people, weapons, and stuff like that. In this case, that's basically what they had. How are you compromising the criminal investigation by doing that? Because suppose you're talking to suspects, and you want to know if they were in the room, and they start describing what's in the room. You want to make sure that the integrity of the entire crime scene, and the crime scene was the concert venue, the crime scene was his vehicle, the crime scene was his room 135 of the Mandalay Bay, 32nd floor. So when you leak the crime scene photographs, and everybody's seen them, they've seen the guns, they've seen his body, they've seen the layout of the room, how can you tell if somebody's telling you, if you had a suspect, and say, I was in the room and I did this, and you can ask them specifics about the way the body looked and the way the room looked. So that's it. That's it in a nutshell. You don't leak crime scene photographs.
Let me just say this. I worked a case in 1998. A local reporter leaked a crime scene photograph on a homicide. Two people, that what happened was it jeopardized the case. It never made it to the prosecution. Two actors were never prosecuted because of the contamination by that crime scene photograph and the chaos that it caused as a result of that. And that reporter is working at a major network now. That's all I'm going to say. But I happen to know the family of the homicide victim, and it's just ridiculous, and it angers me. So you're right, by the way.
You know, Doug, you look at it this way. If I know reporters want to get a scoop and they want to get a story. And Boston 25, her name was Jackie Heinrich, I think. She's the one that got a hold of the police photographs, and she said it. They were police photographs, and it was an exclusive. Those were the first two photographs of two of the rifles that went out, okay? And my sources that are talking to me, telling me that came from someone at the Las Vegas Metro Police Department, command staff level, one of Sheriff Lovato's command staff officers, who was reportedly knew this woman when she used to work here in Las Vegas a couple of years ago. That's where those two photographs come. And we know other photographs were leaked. Now, what the last story I wrote, what I said in there was that I had information from police sources that the body was rolled over, okay? Stephen Paddock's body was moved. It was rolled over. To the extent it was rolled over, I don't know, but it was rolled over because after they cleared the room, I mean, the SWAT team and the three guys cleared the room, they knew those were in there, they wanted to get identification off of him. So they rolled his body over, and then they put it back, I guess, where they thought it was within the position. But, you know, my question is, and the story is, yes, that may have been a legitimate reason to do that because they wanted identification. But my question was, you contaminated the crime scene to some extent because now you're messing with the body. And what I wrote in the story was the photographs that were leaked to the press of, you could see the actual blood coming out of his body, of the weapons, there's a revolver on top of his head when he's laying on the floor and his legs stretched out and everything. Were those photographs, obviously they were not taken, and I since learned they were definitely not taken by crime scene investigator photographers. In other words, police photographers did not take them. Those were taken by people who were in that room with a cell phone camera, okay? So my question was, and I raised it in the story, was were those photographs taken before or after he was rolled over? Now, you know, yes, you don't see any blood smear when he's moving his head, so maybe it's before, but we don't know for sure when it was taken. And I guess it was a commander that gave the order for one of the officers to go ahead and, you know, find the ID on the body, to move the body and roll it over. And my question was, well, was this being videotaped or a photograph while they were doing that? I don't know. I do not know that.
Exactly.
Okay?
Exactly. Yeah.
I know one thing, Doug, okay? Normally when a SWAT team does entries, okay, from what I was told from police sources, they have cameras, just like the body cameras. They have helmet cams or whatever they're using because they, you know, they want to study what they did later on. You know,
sure. Did
we do the right tactics and stuff like that? So my question is here, to the police department is, because I know they're listening to this, and I'll bring up something else I was told the other day that kind of bothers me, but it doesn't, because I kind of knew maybe they were monitoring my cell phone months ago when I started writing stories. So, you know, anyway, I will say this, is some officers in your department and one at command staff level released those photographs to the press. And for Sheriff Lombardo, at the November 2nd interview with KLAS-TV report, I think his name was George Knapp, he said to the reporter, he goes, you know, 50 people had the chain of those photographs and we're never going to be able to find it. Well, that's not true, Sheriff. If you want to hire me part-time, I'll clear this up with you, and I can clear this up and get you those guys within 3 days, because they were not crime scene photographs taken by the police photographer. They were taken, and I found this out after I did the story, by people who were in the room with cell phones. So it's not very hard to find out who this person was that leaked the photographs to Jackie Heinlich at Boston 25. You just check their cell phone records and their internet traffic and their personal cell phone and find out who's been calling or, you know, conversation. Boom, that's your first guy. Now, the other ones were obviously in the room. The one with the guns and stuff, they were released later on. But they were still released by police personnel before crime scene investigators and the photographers got there, from what I am told. And what makes matters worse is the hallway of Mandalay Bay was a crime scene also, because he shot outside the door, allegedly at Campos, and there were bullet holes all over the place. So there were Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department officers who were guarding that hallway. And this was within 1 or 2 days after the shooting. And then we see the photograph leaked to the press of inside the room door, and you see one of the assault rifles with the, I think it has number 2 and number 4 on it, which is the ID tag numbers that they put on them.
Right.
Somebody allowed that female photographer from Los Angeles to breach the integrity of the crime scene, because she's a civilian, and walk down to that door and hold her camera from the outside or stretch in the inside as far as she can go and snap some photographs, and those hit the media. You know, to me, all these people should be fired, and they should be charged, because I think it's a crime. You're obstructing justice, depending on what state you're in. You know, you're interfering with a criminal investigation. But we don't know what's going on in Metro, because obviously they're not telling us. You're not going to call them up. It's a personal matter, if indeed they are doing anything. But I can guarantee you this. Those first two photographs was a command staff officer, and that's what makes this even worse. Because the Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department, and I don't want to go off track here, but I want to say this, because I talked to some cops the other day, and they said, say this for us, and I'll say this. Okay, I've been in this town for 20 years, and plenty of Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department officers who were good cops have gotten screwed in their career because of corrupt sheriffs and corrupt staff officers. And you have to understand something. Everybody above, from captain on down in the LVMPD, has to take a competitive test to make rank. Above the rank of captain, the deputy chiefs, the associate chiefs, under sheriffs, and all that stuff, they're appointed by the sheriff, and he appoints them, and he can bust them down to captain or whatever he wants. So they're all his people that he puts in there. And over the years, I've talked to many Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department officers, and, you know, there's corruption in Metro like there's corruption in every other police department. But then you have this other thing that happens in police departments all over the country, and it happens here with Metro. You have the good old boy system, okay? If they don't like you, they're going to come after you. And they will ruin your career. They will threaten your career. But if command staff officers do the same type of stuff, that they get away with it. Now, nobody should be committing domestic violence on their spouse or their girlfriend, specifically if you're a police officer. You should be fired immediately. I have no bones about saying that. However, over the years, there's been allegations from sheriffs on down to associate sheriffs and deputy chiefs who've committed domestic violence in the Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department, and it has been covered up. Okay?
Yes.
Covered up because they can't be arrested. Why can't they be arrested? Because if you're arrested, number one, you're going to lose your job, and you can't carry a gun if you got a domestic violence conviction, so you can never be a cop again. However, line-level officers and those below the captain and below have been arrested for years. And it's hit the newspapers, the journal, the Las Vegas Review Journal has done stories on it, and the news programs. My point being is this, okay? When you have a police department, and I'm not talking about domestic violence because that's a crime, but I'm talking about, you know, other stuff, sexual harassment mm-hmm. with staff officers, okay? Mm-hmm. And they get away with it. And then other officers are busted down and they're sent to, you know, counseling and all this. I'm not saying it's right for either one, but why is it that command staff officers in the Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department, over the 20 years that I've been here, and I spoke to thousands of cops since I've been here, and many of them my friends, and I know this happened, I know this is true, they get away with it. But the line-level officers, captain and above, they get slammed, and they get their careers ruined, and they get busted. Okay? Now, people say, you talk about corruption and misconduct in the police department, but you got to look at the line level officers, the guys and girls that are out there, the ladies and gentlemen that are out there doing their job every day. How do you think that affects morale in a police department? Not only in Metro, but any police department. When they know that, you know what? If we do this little violation, we do this, or, you know, we violate a policy, we're going to get slammed. But the people up at the top, because I call them the good old boys. I saw it at the Loudoun County Sheriff's Office when I lost my job for that stuff we talked about a couple of weeks ago. Mm-hmm. And it happens in the Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department all the time, and it happens in police departments all across the country. And it's not right, okay? It's not right, because you got officers that are out there putting their life on the line, and the morale, and I heard that the morale in the Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department right now is gutter level. It's low, okay?
That's sad.
And it has mm-hmm. been low for a long time, because what you have here with sheriffs is this, okay? You cannot run for sheriff and get in and get elected in Clark County unless you have the support of, one, the casinos, because they give you the big bucks, and, of course, the general population. But you have to have the support of the incumbent sheriff who decides he's not running. A case in point. I'll go back 20-something years ago when I first got here. Jerry Keller was the sheriff of Clark County. He decided he was not going to run. So he supported his undersheriff or associate sheriff, I remember his time, Bill Young. And, of course, Bill Young gets support from the casinos and the population because the incumbent sheriff says he's a good guy and they want him. And I'm not saying they're not good guys, but I'm saying then he gets elected. Bill Young gets elected. Then a couple of years later, he decides he doesn't want to run for re-election. So he supports Doug Gillespie, okay? And Doug Gillespie gets in. And then a couple of years later, two terms, I think he ran for two terms, Doug Gillespie, he decides he's not running for sheriff. So he supports his man, Joe Lombardo. And then Joe Lombardo gets elected. Okay? I'm not saying anything about these people as an individual. I know some things about these guys that they've done, okay? And a lot of things will cover it up, domestic violence and other allegations like that. But what I'm saying is this, okay? You got somebody, say a captain or below, who wants to run for sheriff on the police department. They have tenure, they have a good, you know, they have good reputation, they have good history in the police department. They cannot get the chance to even run for sheriff. I mean, you can run, but you're not going to get in because you have to have the support from the sheriff. And once the sheriff says, the incumbent sheriff says, I'm not running, I'm supporting this guy, then he gets the backing from the casinos and the business people and, you know, the news media and stuff like that. And of course, the population. So that's the problem. I don't understand this. Okay. I've been here 20 years. They need to go to the General Assembly and they need to, get rid of the sheriff. Any sheriff running the Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department, because the sheriff is an elected official, okay? And what they did is, years ago, they merged the sheriff's office and the city police from Las Vegas into, and this was, I think, in the late 70s, early 80s, they merged it into the... But they kept the elected sheriff controlling the police department. They need to get rid of that, okay? They need to appoint a police chief, the commission, the county board of supervisors, appoint a police chief and get rid of this. Why do I say that? Sure, you can have problems with police chiefs and they're going to be corrupt and they're going to do their stuff, okay? But when you have an elected official, and I said this all the time, I said on a radio, a talk show something the other day, somebody was asking me and I said, I don't care how good a cop you were, okay? Once you run for sheriff, you're now a politician, okay? And you may wear the uniform, but you're a politician. People gave you bucks to get in there. Favors, just like a regular politician, favors need to be returned, okay? And I'm not only talking about Metro. I'm talking about across the country.
Sure.
So the problem you have with Metro is it's a police department, and people always say, well, why is a sheriff running the police department? Because that's the way it is out here. You know, that's the way it happened when they formed the police department. They say, okay, we'll still have the elected sheriff running. Now, what's good about Metro, which I didn't have when I lost my job 25 years ago in Loudoun County, is they are civil service, okay, and they have a union. And we didn't have civil service, and we couldn't belong to a union because we were deputy sheriffs. But when they merged the police department, they became sort of like, you know, deputies and policemen, the Metropolitan Police Department. It's combined. But they're protected by civil service to some extent, and they're protected by the union. They have, I think it's the police protection union, whatever they call it out here. But it's a union. We didn't have that in Loudoun County, and I still believe to this day they do not have it, because the state code back in Virginia was that you couldn't be a deputy sheriff and belong to any collective bargaining union, and we didn't have civil service. So that's why so many guys, even to this day back there here, still get screwed in their careers and stuff. But you know, that's my beef with this, is that, you know, when you got upper management in police departments and sheriff's office getting away with stuff that lower line level officers would be arrested and lose their job, yet they don't. I mean, there was an allegation a couple of weeks ago. There was a captain that just retired, supposedly got stopped over at the airport, you know, off duty driving, and he was under the influence. He hit a car on a fender bender, and from what I was told, the police officer that got there drove him home. Okay? Now, if that was Officer Smith or Lieutenant Smith or Sergeant Smith, he would probably have been arrested and he would have lost his job. Okay? But when the line level officers see this BS that goes on all the time, it ruins the morale on the department, and it's not right. Okay? Because I lost my job because of corruption and this kind of stuff that goes on in the sheriff's office. So that stuff is not right. Okay? And the allegations against upper management of the Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department has been ongoing for the 20 years I've been here. You know, domestic violence that was covered up, sexual assault that was covered up by upper management people, allegedly including some of the sheriffs. Okay? Behavior that's just unbelievable. Some of the behavior that you hear is just unbelievable. And this is upper management people. But if when a cop does it, you know, you lose your job, yeah, or you get busted down at rank, or yep, you're never going to get promoted again, you know, because you're not with that clique that's up at the top above the rank of captain. So, and it's not only specific to Metro here, it's specific to all police departments across the country, because I get calls from cops all the time across the country, and I've heard horror stories. I want to say one thing before I forget, because I was going to mention this. I spoke to Frank Serpico last night.
Nah.
He says hello.
Okay.
But he's going to be on a radio show in Baltimore, I think today or tomorrow, next couple of days, because there's something that happened. I got to talk about this for a minute or two.
Sure.
There was a detective, his last name was Suda. He was killed a couple of weeks ago in Baltimore, a few days before he was supposed to testify against a bunch of crooked cops. Okay?
Yep.
Now, go ahead.
No, we know the case. Please continue. I'm sorry. We know the case.
Okay. It's there's so much that's wrong with this. And then Frank brought up a lot of stuff that he's going to talk about when he was on that radio. He's going to be on a Baltimore radio show, and he's, you know, from his home in New York, and he's going to talk about it, because he said, should I go on? I said, yes, go on, because the guy's dead. He has no voice. But it's getting crazier. I mean, his partner was off. His normal partner was off that night. He had another guy for a partner who, from what I'm hearing, from what I read, you know, was running across the street to hide while this guy's getting shot.
Yep.
Now they're trying to say he committed suicide. They're bringing that all's allegations up. But yet there's three rounds at the scene, and whether the gun's missing or there, I don't know. But, you know, how would you commit suicide and shoot yourself three times, I mean, you know, in the head? So that's all a bunch of nonsense. And he was supposed to testify either at the grand jury or in court just like a few days after he was killed. And the big thing here is, while the other guy's across the street hiding behind a car and running the opposite direction, his partner that night, from what I'm told, the assailant got away. And I guess it's the first time, and when I heard, and I don't know, I heard it's the first time in a long time in Baltimore where so much time has gone by and they actually haven't arrested the perpetrator who, you know, allegedly shot Detective Suda. So, and it gets more and more, you know, the police chief is coming out making statements that just are just bizarre. Anyway, this detective was dead. They buried him a couple of, I think 2 weeks ago. They had the funeral service out there in Baltimore. There's so much wrong with this. It just bothers me. I mean, he was going to testify against a bunch of crooked cops. And if this turns out to be, somebody was put up to hit him or kill him and cops were involved, it's going to be another black mark on law enforcement.
Indeed.
And that's why when I hear stories like this, and I hear stories from cops, they call me up all the time and they tell me stuff. I'm going to tell you something. You know, my story took like 20, you know, okay, the news came out, you know, 25 years ago and did it. You hear about Frank Serpico, you hear about other cops, but every day there's hundreds of cops across this country that are going through the same thing. And you never hear about them. You never hear about it because it never makes the news. You know, you cannot talk against another cop. I don't care if it's a line-level cop or it's a police chief or a sheriff or whatever you want to say it. your police career is ruined. And in a case like this, I hope to God that they're saying it was something, they were investigating him and this partner that was with him that night, was not his regular partner. I think they were investigating a triple homicide or something. And then somebody approached the detective Suter, who was ended up getting killed. And then his partner, I guess they got video, he's like running across the street, hiding behind a car for cover or something, he's supposedly calling in. You know, I'll tell you this, you know what? No cop wants to get killed. But, you know, it's just like being in the military. If my partner is getting shot, I am not going to be across the street running the other direction, hiding by a car. It means I'm going to get shot with him, and then we're both going to get shot, and we're both going to die together. But this whole thing out in Baltimore really bothers me. So anyway, Frank, I talked to Frank last night, and he's going to be on a show talking about it out there in Baltimore.
We'll promote Frank's appearance. In fact, if there's an archive of his appearance, and he certainly, next time you talk to him, tell him to come back on our show. We'll invite him back on. John, certainly, Frank Serpico, good guy. But you're right. I mean, this erodes the confidence of the rank and file of law enforcement, and it's shameful. I mean, well, it does more than that. But
and what happened here in Baltimore, Doug? I don't know if you where you saw the suicide claims, but it, from everything I saw, like you said, there's part. A videotape, which I'm not, it shows at least the partner running across the street behind a car. Right. We also know that the fallen police officer died with his hand clutched to his radio, and it was shot with his own gun. But, yeah, it's very unfortunate. And he was set to testify, as you said, in a grand jury, in case involving other officers and officer corruption. And it's a shame that we don't have the information on this. And this has been sketchy since day one, since I heard it.
We had a very similar, just real quick, we had a very similar case back in 1980 here in our hometown with the police officer getting killed. That was, the last police officer that was killed in this area.
But in Baltimore, I mean, the unsolved homicides in Baltimore are so much higher than anywhere else in the country, what I remember. And the crimes there are, you know, with the relationship between the police and the community has been so frayed in recent years that it's just a mess there. But, you know, the first thing I thought of when I saw the story was, is this other police involvement? Did that testimony he was going to give have something to do with his death? And I'm afraid we won't see the answers.
That's going to be, it's going to be interesting to see how that goes out. But the biggest thing with this with me is the guy running away. It's the partner running across the street. I'm like, hey, you know what? You know, nobody becomes a police officer to die, okay? They want to go home to their wife and their family just like a truck driver and everybody else. But when you pin on that badge, you have you're saying that if you're going to – Jesus Christ. I mean, if you got to run away when another police officer is getting shot, and I don't know this guy, okay? I don't know who he is or anything like that, but I'm saying I've seen the video – where he's running away and the other guy's getting shot. Mm. And then what makes it worse, add insult to industry, to injury, is the suspect gets away.
Yeah.
And then he doesn't even go after the suspect. So now we have a dead detective and a suspect who killed him, and he's not in anywhere to be found. Now, I can guarantee you one thing. If this was a setup job where some criminal that was involved with these crooked cops, and I'm not saying this is just my point of view, that they got a hold of one of their criminal buddies and said, listen, you know, go out and do this and make it look like this, this guy's long gone out of the state of Maryland. I can guarantee you. It'd be a miracle if he's still there. He'd be stupid if he's probably gone.
You know, they cleared the partner cop of any wrongdoing or any kind of infraction as far as procedure, which was kind of surprising, knowing that he ran away.
Yeah.
No, I don't know. I mean, it's, you know, that's in his conscience, whatever he did. I wasn't there. I just saw the videotape of him running across the street and his partner's getting shot. And I'm like, hey, you know, you don't leave your partner. I'm sorry.
No, you know, you
nobody,
don't, you
like I said, nobody wants to die. But, you know, if my partner's getting shot, we're going to be there together.
That's right.
Whether it was both die or we survive it, but I'm certainly not going to run away. So anyway, I leave that at that. But yeah, I want to get back to the, this.
Go ahead. Where are we at with Vegas here? I mean, we've got I'm not going to tick off everything here, but we've got no answers. Basically, bottom line, we don't know what the hell We don't know anything. You know,
You know, Doug, what even makes it worse is that we don't know anything is the other day, and I did this in one of the stories, Kevin McMahill, who's the undersheriff, is the number two guy, Lobato's right-hand man, was on Nevada Public Radio. And this was right after I was on the Tucker Carlson show on Fox. And he said that sometime in January, they're going to release a report about the incident. Okay. Right. You know, and I'm going to tell you right now, don't expect too much. Okay. I think it's going to go something like this. Okay. Paddock was a lone shooter. He was not connected to anybody. He committed suicide. And pretty much that's it. And they may have what they believe a motive or something why he did it. They'll come out and say something like that, and they'll justify why they said it. They are not going to release anything. They're not going to release anything to corroborate anything in that report. I do not believe, just like they haven't released, and I say they, the Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department and MGM Resorts International, the owners of the Mandalay Bay Hotel, which was the site of the worst mass shooting in American history. And I want to say this too. There's nothing. This media out here, okay? And I did a tweet last night on this. It get over this, okay? First, they call this the 1 October event, okay? And I put that in one of my stories. It was not an event. It was a massacre. An event is a party, okay? 58 people are dead, okay? We don't have any answers. Over 500 were injured and wounded. So they went from the 1 October event, because of course you can't call it a massacre or anything like that because it'll hurt the image of the city. So you clean it up and you do a politically correct statement. Yes, the Las Vegas Convention and Visitors Authority controls the media in this town. Okay? So you called it the 1 October event. And then you hear now the 1 October shooting. Okay? Do it the way it's supposed to be. Put the one back where it's supposed to go, October 1st massacre. That's what this was, and it will always be that, whether we find out the truth or we don't find out the truth. Because what's this whole thing about? It's about the reputation and the tourism for Las Vegas and the reputation of the casinos in this town. That's what this whole thing is about. Neither the LVMPD or MGM Resorts International have released not one bit of evidence since day one to corroborate anything they have said, whether it was the statement that MGM came out with, statements they've made to the news, and anything Sheriff Lombardo and Under Sheriff McMahill have said. We have seen nothing. We're supposed to be like a bunch of sheep listening to this coming out, well, everything that's coming out of their mouth and with MGM written in a statement and say, well, it sounds right, so we'll go ahead and believe it. Okay? And why am I saying this? And I'll go back to this. I think I hit on this the last time I was on the show. Okay? Sheriff Lombardo and Under Sheriff McMahill from the start have given misleading, deceptive, and all-out lies to the public. I say the press, the public. The press is the public. The public, okay? And they try to justify it by saying, you know, we didn't know this a week ago, and now we know this, and 3 weeks later we changed the timeline, and now we checked in here, and 2 weeks later he checked in over there, and this is what we don't know. You know something, Sheriff Lombardo? Him, because he's never going to talk to me. I even put in my story the other day. You want to interview with me? Do it, and I'll put in verbatim what you said. Okay? You made your entire department across the world look like the Keystone Cops. Yes, and I'm not saying that. That's in writings all over the world because of this. Because what you should have done was keep your big, stupid mouth shut, just like the FBI did. They made one statement, and they didn't say anything else. And you come out and you say, listen, this is a major investigation. You give us time to do this, whether it's a couple of weeks, a couple of months, and when it's over with, we'll go ahead and lay everything out that we got. But every day, sometimes twice a day, he had to have his face on television because he's up for re-election next year. And everything that came out of his mouth, he either contradicted another statement or was just an all-out lie or was deceptive. Now, since October 13th, we didn't hear anything from him. Now, on November 2nd, he did this one-on-one television interview with KLS-TV. And Knapp, the interviewer, the reporter, was sitting across from him within 3 feet, okay? And in that interview was basically, it was apparently that we're trying to get him some credibility back, okay? But it blew up in his face. Why?
not with anybody else, because I wrote a story on it. And the story I wrote was, after that, was Sheriff Joe Lombardo incompetent, lying, or both? Okay? And the reason why I said that was because of four or five things he said in that interview, and he didn't get challenged on it. Now, if you're any type of competent investigative journalist, or even a kid out of college, okay, and you're interviewing the man who runs the Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department, and he makes a statement like this, and I don't have the exact words here, but I'm about to paraphrase. He makes something like, you know, George, in 2015, he's talking about Paddock, he lost a lot of money, so, you know, I think that could have been a factor in why he did what he did. And then it was like 15, 20 minutes later, he's back on that same subject, and he says, you know, he lost a lot of money in 2015, but I don't think it had a factor in what he did. And then you got this guy sitting there who was supposed to be an investigative journalist, and he doesn't challenge him on that. And I would have said, wait a minute, Sheriff. You know, 20 minutes ago, you just said the opposite. So which is it? Did he? Didn't. But he just lets it go, because obviously he can't make the sheriff look, you know, stupid. So then he makes this other statement that, you know, this, and I think I got it over here verbatim and something. But anyway, he says, you know, we wanted to get into that room immediately because we didn't want him reloading magazines and opening fire again. Now, you'd think the reporter that's interviewing him would have said to him, well, wait a minute, Sheriff, what did you just say? Well, what I just said, if you didn't hear me, is that we had to get into that room immediately because we didn't want him reloading magazines and opening fire on the crowd. Well, we know that didn't happen immediately. They didn't do it for an hour and 5 minutes later. So why didn't that reporter from the news station out here challenge him and say, wait a minute, Sheriff, that's not true. You waited an hour and 5 minutes. So when I wrote my story, I said, so where was the urgency from Sheriff Lombardo based on his comments for the public safety? If he said they wanted to get in there immediately, yet they waited an hour and 5 minutes, and he doesn't get challenged on it. And then it gets even worse, because then a couple of minutes later, he says, but you got to understand something, George, or something like that. He says, had he opened fire again, we would have breached the door immediately. Now, you think, again, he would get challenged on that. But no, the reporter asked him a totally different question to get him off the subject. Now, I would have said to him, wait a minute, Chef, what'd you just say? Well, Doug, if you didn't hear what I said, I just said that had he opened fire again, we would have breached the room immediately. And then I would have said to him, really, Sheriff? So you would have waited till he opened fire, which means he's shooting more people out the window, if indeed he was the one that did it, okay? Because we don't know that. We don't know anything right
now.
Yeah,
exactly.
So that's what I would have said. So you would have waited till he shot more people, then you would have tried to breach the door to get in. Whether that would have taken you 20 seconds, 30 seconds, a minute, nobody knows. And then another question I would have raised, being that he said that out of his own mouth, and I put verbatim in my story when I wrote that story exactly what he said, and that's basically what he said. I would have said, well, let me ask you another question, Sheriff, being that that was the stupidest remark I ever heard in my life, that you would have waited till he opened fire again and more people were getting shot, and then you would have hit the door. But now you just said that to me, that those officers that were in that stairwell, okay, were fully capable of breaching that door the minute that they got into that stairwell. Now, I said in my stories, all those officers that night, okay, and I'm wearing this shirt over here. I got it from a police officer. It's a Las Vegas Metropolitan sweatshirt. That's their badge over here. I'm doing that to honor all the officers at the ground, and everybody did a great job that night. Even the officers that went into the room with Levi Hancock, they right. were all heroes. Because on the radio traffic, and I listen to radio traffic, you could hear them in the hall that they wanted to go in, but they were told, no, stand by, wait till SWAT makes a plan. Well, SWAT didn't make a plan. Only one SWAT guy was in that hallway, and that was Levi Hancock. We know that that happened, okay? We know that happened. So they waited. Now, they have this training. After Columbine, police departments across the country went to all types of training because nobody wanted, you know, they waited outside the school while kids were getting killed because they had to wait for the, quote, SWAT team. Like, the SWAT guys are some superhero cops, and every other cops are a bunch of idiots and don't know how to do their job. So back then, you had to wait for SWAT because a regular cop can't go in because SWAT is like Superman. So while they were waiting outside, kids were getting killed. So after Columbine, all the police departments across the country changed their procedure, and they came up to the strike team type of thing. Is the first three or four, and it depends on the department's policies, but usually it's the first three or four officers on the scene of an active shooter. They go in. They don't wait for SWAT. They go in as a three and four because that's the way they're trained. And then, you know, years ago they had this training called MACTAC, and even some retired cop sent me a nasty email through LinkedIn a couple of weeks ago and said, I didn't know what I was talking about because you don't know the procedures and this, that. These guys are MACTAC training, and MAC stands for multi-assault counterterrorism training. But, you know, they're all, most of the cops are trained on that. And I said, well, I'm glad you brought that up. I said, because now you just reinforce what I've been saying and what the sheriff said. So when the sheriff told the reporter that had Paddock opened fire again, they would have gone into that room immediately, meaning the officers in the hall. So what the sheriff just told the public is that those officers that were in that hall, 3, 4, 5, 6, and I think later it was like 8 of them, within minutes, they were up there within minutes after Paddock stopped firing, okay, were fully capable and equipped to breach room 32-135. But they didn't do it because they had to wait for SWAT. That's my point on this whole thing, okay? And everybody says, you know, they're looking at after the fact, that there was a dead body, Paddock was in the room dead. My point is, those cops that night did not know how many people were in that room, that Stephen Paddock was in that room, that it would be a dead body in that room. All they knew was that was the windows, allegedly, that the shots were coming out of. So, SWAT. And we know that SWAT wasn't there. So my question to the sheriff is this, because nobody out here is asking him that question. None of the media. Sheriff, where was the SWAT team that night that only Levi Hancock responded to that one standwell, okay? Where were the rest of the guys? Were they all drunk at home? They were doing something else? Or were they on another operation somewhere in this town that you do not want to talk about? Okay? That's my answer to him. I don't know. All I know is it's like a big secret. We know over an hour later, they start showing up. But my question is this. If Levi Hancock got into that stairwell with the explosives, okay, to breach the door, where did he come from? Because it was a Sunday night. Now, the SWAT team out here doesn't work like some departments. They have you on a SWAT team, but you're in patrol also. When you get a SWAT call out, you leave what you're doing. Right. SWAT team out here, they're SWAT guys. They're permanently assigned to SWAT. They do search warrants. They do training and all this type of stuff. The dignitary protection sometimes when dignitaries come in. So where was Levi Hancock that night that he got to the Mandalay Bay? You know, they went in an hour and 5 minutes later, but that not any more of his officers on the team, the SWAT team, could have got there the way he did. Now, there was one other guy on the radio that you hear early on is Zebra 10, and he's there, but he's in another stairwell. And my question, too, is that is why didn't he leave that stairwell to at least go in with Tim? But I don't know. But there was no SWAT team that the sheriff McMahill told us for a week that the SWAT team made entry. And then they do the 60 Minutes show, and we find out, lo and behold, there wasn't any SWAT team. There was Levi Hancock, lone SWAT officer who was not on the 60 Minutes show, but they showed a photograph of him, and the two canine officers, Sergeant Fitzko and Officer Newton, and Detective Matthew Donaldson, who was in uniform, and I, whatever reason, but I already was a detective. So those are the three guys that go in with Levi Hancock. And my question to this day, until I die, until I get some answers, is where was at least 5 or 6 other SWAT guys that could have went into that room with Levi Hancock? And the reason why I said that in the story I wrote is even Matthew Donaldson makes some statements on 60 Minutes, and I got the transcript when he says, you know, they were concerned that there would be other, he was concerned people would be jumping out of the woodwork, okay, yeah. Which means this should have been a full SWAT team entry, period, amen, and that's who should have went. But they weren't there. Levi had to go in by himself. And another interesting fact, I saw this the other day, and I put it in the story, as I overlooked, because I didn't look at the transcript of the 60 Minutes, is one of the officers says, when they were in the room and they were clearing it, he didn't want to go in front of the windows because he didn't want to get shot by the sniper.
I saw that.
Okay?
Yeah.
So now, I put that in my story. So now we know that an hour and 5 minutes after the last shot was fired, that there were snipers positioned somewhere outside, either in a helicopter or some other position, because they had to, you know, get the look into the windows, and it's 32 stories up. We don't know where they were, but we do know, according to what he said on 60 Minutes, this officer, he didn't want to go in front of the windows when they were clearing the room because he didn't get shot by a sniper. So, and I put that in the story. Now, why didn't anybody at command level in the Las Vegas Metro Police Department, and I put that in the other story, too, that I wrote, that incompetence led to the massacre, why didn't they think about when they were making the plans for that concert opened on the corner looking up at those towers and say, you know what, we better have some snipers ready in case somebody does attack from above. But they didn't think about it. And that's what command-level officers under Sheriff Lombardo are supposed to be getting paid to do to protect the public safety, is to think about that type of incident it should occur. They didn't do it. And what about saying maybe we should have some strike teams already in place at Mandalay Bay, the Luxor, and the hotels, towers that surrounded that concert venue? So if something did happen, they could immediately respond. Okay? Now I want to say one thing, I know we're getting close to the end of the show, okay? And I keep harping on this because it doesn't make any sense to me. MGM Resorts International came out with a statement early on when all this stuff was going on, the battle between them and the police department, is when Campos got shot, okay? I don't know when Campos got shot. I'll tell you this. Common sense would tell any person that nobody is going to approach a door when they hear gunshots coming from inside. And if you're shooting 223s and 308s from a hotel room outside a window, you are going to hear that in the hallway. So I'll tell you this. I don't know. I wasn't up there with Campos, but I'll tell you this. I doubt seriously Jesus Campos was approaching that door when any type of firing was going on. Now, when they put him on the comedy show, the Ellen DeGeneres show, because they didn't want him being talked to and interviewed by anybody that knows what they're talking about, he said that when he was checking the barricaded door, he had to walk towards Paddock's door because his door was on the end. He's walking towards it. But Paddock doesn't see him. My question, too, is why, if he had the camera set up? But right. Then he goes into the stairwell, which was next to the suite, and then he says when he came out, the door slammed, and he's walking away down the hall is when he said the shots come out and he got shot. But early on, Kevin McMahill said to the public that Campos got shot while he was approaching the door. So we know that was another lie. Okay, that didn't happen that way. So that's what I'm talking about. This whole thing, I don't know when Campos got shot. I still don't know. All I know is that he's got to have some type of common sense that he's not going to be walking down a hall approaching a door if he hears gunshots coming from inside. So I would safely say this, that when Campos got shot, there was no firing before as he approached that door. So okay. You can determine whether that was 9:59 or 10:05. You know, I don't know. We don't know. Because we haven't seen anything to back up anything that the police or MGM has said. I want to get back to this thing before I forget with MGM's state.
Go ahead.
They put out the statement and they said, no. They went against the police department. That's this battle of the 3 weeks when the police changed the timelines three times. And the last time they changed it would help MGM Resorts International in a civil suit. But the MGM came out and said this. There were Metro officers inside the hotel with our security at the time Jesus Campos was calling in over the radio that there were shots. And they said in their statement that our security team and Metro responded immediately up there. Well, I don't know how that could be possible. Unless the three Metro guys were complete idiots, and they're not idiots because I know Metro guys, is because the dispatcher for almost 17, 18 minutes did not know that the shots were coming from the 32nd floor anywhere around 135. So if you believe the MGM statement that when the shots were fired at Campos, he got on the radio, the security radio, and standing next to the security guys, because they were supposedly there for some other call, the Metro officers, they heard that, you know, Campos over the radio saying, I'm getting shot. That's what MGM said. They all responded. Is this. Whether they did or not, I don't know. Videotape in the hotel may show that. Is this. If that is true, okay, then how come the Metro police dispatcher did not know the shots were coming from 32-135 until way after the shots stopped? And it was like, I timed it. I timed it down to the millisecond. From the first officer that called in shots fired at the concert venue, it was over 18 minutes, and the next traffic you hear is the officers are on the 32nd floor. We have a security officer shot standing by the elevator, and he says the shots definitely coming from 135. My point being is this. If Jesus Campos was calling over that radio when he got shot, okay, which the sheriff now says was about 10:05 when Paddock opened fire, that's the last version that we heard, then how come nobody at Metro Dispatch knew for over 15, 16, 17 minutes that the shots were coming? Wouldn't those police officers get on the radio and say, wait, the shots are coming from 32, we're responding up there? But you never hear that over the radio. And the dispatcher for all that time still doesn't know where the exact shots were coming from, except when that one officer gets on the radio, and he got there real fast. He says, I'm at 31. I think the shots were coming from 32. But my point is, where is this traffic from the police officers who are with Mandalay Bay security officers? How come you don't hear them on the radio saying, we're responding up to 32, even before that other cop got on the radio when he was on 31, and say, they're definitely coming because we got an officer up there and he's being shot at? You never hear that. And the confirmation that it's actually 135 isn't for 17 to 18 minutes, definitely confirmed about 18 minutes and 30 seconds after the first officer at the concert venue fired the shots. I listened to these tapes 20 ways to Sunday, and I timed it. So that MGM statement bothers me. You know, something's wrong here. The problem we got with this, Doug and Joe, is that right now we know absolutely nothing. We know nothing. Like I said, we have a dead body. They're saying he shot himself. He's the only one. That's what they're telling us. And they're coming out with a report in January. What they're not going to do, and I only got a couple of minutes, so I got to bring this up. They are appealing the release of the documents, either the coroner's report, and they don't want anything else released, Metro Police Department. The judge back in September, the judge, Clark County District Court judge, said that the coroner's reports are public records. So what did the coroner do to release them? He said, we're not releasing them, we're going to appeal it. So he goes to the Clark County Commission, and they agree with him. They're using taxpayers' money to appeal that decision, so coroner's reports are not public records, when the judge already ruled that they are. And then what does Metro do the other day? They got attorneys right now fighting the release of any other documents, because the five newspapers, it was the Las Vegas Journal a couple of weeks ago, the Washington Post, LA Times, the New York Times, Associated Press, and I think it was KTNV television station here, filed a petition in federal court and in local court, district court. They want everything released, not only from Mandalay Bay. They want all the homicide report. They want everything, reports, tapes, everything. And the police are fighting that to get it. And that's not going to be resolved till sometimes after the New Year's. I don't think the judge is going to say they're not getting anything. And I don't think we're going to see a whole lot of corroboration even when that report comes out in January. And it's a disgusting shame. This is about one thing here. People got to know it. It's not about the police department, and it's not about the casinos. Well, it is, but to me, it's not. It's about 58 people who are dead, and they're survivors that don't have answers to the worst mass shooting in American history, and January 1st is 3 months, and all we got is basically nothing. And what have we got all this time? Lies, misconceptions, convoluted stories, and contradictions from the sheriff and the number two guy running this police department. It's a total, absolute disgrace. Now, I heard something today, I know we've been caught to cut it off here, but from one of the cops that talked to me, told me that I better watch my cell phone, because they are dying to find out where my sources are. And we already knew that from, you know, when I got called by the IA a couple of weeks ago, I already talked about that. But, you know, they said most likely your cell phone is tapped and your text messages, so I use the computer. But I'll tell you this. I can guarantee they don't have a legal wiretap, if indeed that is true. If I ever find out that the Las Vegas Metro Police Department, and I was told it was possibly criminal intelligence unit, okay, are tapping my cell phone without a court order, and if the FBI, you're listening, listen to this, I'll to my last breath, I will make sure everybody knows about it, because this is a bunch of BS. My question is, what the hell are you afraid of? What there the hell go. Are you afraid of? Okay.
Yep.
What is the
yep.
big deal in this there investigation that you have to do that and you worry about sources? How about worrying about your own people who compromised the integrity of a criminal investigation and released photographs to the press and allowed a civilian photographer to go into a crime scene area, and about the sheriff making statements that make absolutely no sense to the public? How about an internal affairs investigation to uncover that?
Absolutely. Doug, we're out of time, man. I'll tell you what, you were just on fire. We didn't want to interrupt. Thank you. We're absolutely out of time. Please come back. And by the way, the law enforcement authorities who are watching this and recording this, do me a favor, send us a transcript. Be a pal, will you? And you're right. By the way, I don't like veiled threats either. To have you on, when you come on, I don't like veiled threats, getting them, saying that, hey, you know, you ought not to be talking about this. It's something, maybe you and I should talk about. Doug, thank you so much.
Appreciate it, guys.
All right.
Take care, Joe. Doug, thanks a lot.
All right.
Thanks, Doug.
Interesting. Okay, all right. Good night, everyone.
See you next week.